This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm here, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts. Hey, thanks for tuning in and being a supportive listener to the show. My goal in advancing the aftermarket is to bring wide-ranging information to help set strategy, direction, and goals for you and your business. Now, please subscribe so you don't miss one episode. Hey, how do you prevent apathy in your business? That's a good question. Now, we know hiring is a crucial component in setting your culture the right way, but culture isn't a set-it-and-forget-it concept. In this episode, learn some important tactics that my panel uses in their business to help keep a pulse on their people. Hey, thanks to our partners Shopware and Broadly for providing this episode for you. Now, here's something to think about. How often do your advisors play phone tag? Well, every ring, every voicemail, it's time ticking on a stall job. Shopware's digital communication is really as easy as the customer clicks yes. Find out more on the web at GetShopware.com. Hey, what's one thing that top shop owners like Urban Auto Care have that sets them apart from the rest? Well, hundreds of five-star reviews is the answer. Literally. Hey, you could have this too on the web at GetBroadly.com/chat. Welcome, Jack Curran, the Chief Operating Officer of GNC Tire and Auto Service, two locations in Virginia. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Carm. How are we doing today?
Thanks to have you here again, my friend. Jim Hayes is with us, General Manager, Pacific Motor Service, Monterey and Pacific Grove, California. Hey, guys. I love this topic. Is employee apathy a sign of a terminally ill business? I'm hoping to hear today, is it possible that the problem's involvement or engagement in the success of the business that we're involving our people? I'm also curious about, do our people feel belonging enough to the team, which may be causing certain apathy about the business or coming to work apathy about the team? And do our people, are the people in the right seats in the right job? I mean, do we really have the fitment there, if you will, the round peg in the round hole? Jim, I want to start with you. How much does team apathy fall on the owner?
Well, I think everything begins and ends with leadership. So I would have to say everything falls upon the owner, including the team apathy. It may be as simple as a hiring issue. It may be as grave as the owner being disengaged and apathetic towards either the team or the company at worst. So initially, it starts on the shoulders of the owner and the management, the leadership team.
Can owners be burned out and the team sees it?
I think so. I think the team would probably be the first one to see it. I'm not an owner. I'm in part of the leadership team. But I think when our owner, who is typically very engaged, who you know, Kevin, if he ever gets kind of, I won't say burned out, but if he loses focus for an instant, the team kind of sees it before he does sometimes. So I think from an ownership perspective, it's almost imperative of us to focus on giving the leadership or the ownership some feedback if we ever see that happening, because burnout can come for 100 different reasons. And it might be not burnout, it might be disengagement for another reason or loss of focus because of a health issue, et cetera. So I think it's important for the team, if we foster engagement properly, to also give that feedback to the owner. So there's a 360 leadership aspect to it.
My comment about that, Jim, is every once in a while we have those kind of days as the leaders. And Jim, it doesn't matter if you're the COO, the general manager, the owner. Hey, Ed, good to have you here with us and everyone who's on with us in social media. You have a bad day, okay? We're all allowed to have a bad day. And you're driving home and you reflect on your day. I mean, that's me. I'm always reflecting, even sometimes within the hour, I'm reflecting. And you sense that you may have said or done something that hopefully no one saw. And to your point, it's very difficult to hide that.
You know, we're all allowed to have a bad day, but we're not allowed to all have a bad day. So I think if you have a solid team around you, we'll be able to fight it, right? So the apathy, that's what you want to call it, the disinterest stops at the door if you have the right people on the team.
Thank you for that. Jack, if we don't care how the other person feels, have we failed? And I think there needs to be some empathy brought into the apathy piece.
For sure. So one of my favorite things, one of my good friends and I talk about this all the time. It's a quote from Maya Angelou. She said, "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And, you know, that's important when you're dealing with your employees, when you're dealing with customers. You have to understand that they have feelings too. And if you are disengaged, if you don't show them that you care, they're going to feel that. They're going to, you know, basically become the same way that you are towards them. You know, they're not going to care about your customers. They're not going to care about anything because you don't care. So if you don't have a passion for what you do every day, then you're going to lose your employees. You're going to lose your customers. I've seen it in numerous restaurants in my region where they have employees that just don't care. The restaurants close down. So I don't want to be one of those guys. I want to continue being successful. So you have to take other people's feelings into consideration at all times.
You said a mouthful. The employees don't care. Isn't our job as owners and as leaders to make them want to care? And if they don't, and the pulse of your business says they don't, I'm sorry, it's a redundant thing I keep saying on almost every show. It's the man in the mirror's fault.
Right. And that's the fun part, is getting everybody engaged, making it fun, you know, having fun throughout the day and showing that you actually care. For the customers especially, they have to have that feeling of, you know, we care about them. We care about their needs. We care about what's going on with them, because, you know, for a customer looking at it from their aspect, if we don't care how they feel, they're going to go somewhere else that does make them feel good. You know, we're taking a lot of their money and they don't always understand why we're taking it. And to us, it happens every day, but to them, it happens every 5 months to 2 years. So this is a new thing for them that they don't understand. They're scared of it. And we have to show them other people have gone through this. It's okay. We're going to make it okay for you too. And that's a sign of caring. You know, if you have employees that don't care about the customers, then you've already lost.
Is it toxic when the whole place is bad, Jim? I think the answer is yes.
I think if the entire place is bad, I think toxicity is maybe a symptom of the problems. I think it really starts, if you want to talk about apathy in a way that's meaningful, I think that there are some people out there that are apathetic towards themselves and their lives and what they do. I think you can't let apathy in the door. So when the team doesn't appreciate the client, there's going to be apathy in a relationship. I think if you bring a person on the team that tends toward apathy, you're in trouble already. So when the whole place is toxic, yeah, definitely you've got a problem. If you ever let it get to that point as an owner, I think you're doing the wrong thing. I think as an owner, speaking as a non-owner, I think one of the most important parts of my role as a leader and the owner's role as the owner of the company is now to not make the automotive industry his passion, but to make the people his passion. We spend a lot of time doing engagement surveys. We spend a lot of time meeting with our team one-on-one. We really have to find where they are, whether it be a personal situation or a professional situation, where they are, where they're moving towards, what they're moving from, and what sort of support we can give them. My role is largely a support role. I don't work on cars. I don't deal with the clients one-on-one very often. I work with my team every day, all day. And for the most part, it's engaging in what they have, whether it's at home or whether it's at work. If there's an obstacle that needs to be overcome, then that's my job. Their job is to overcome the obstacles of the client. My job is to overcome their obstacles, whether it's a hard day at home or a professional development process that they're in. Once I disengage, or if the owner disengages from that, then we've really got a problem. And I think that's where the apathy starts. If I become apathetic towards them, then that snowball's just going to roll downhill.
If you don't care about them, they're not going to care about anything. And that's the worst part. And seeing all the restaurants around here that have failed, you get that. You walk in, the hostess, you know, looks at you with disinterest, you know, almost like you're bothering them. You can sense it, and you know that you're never going back to that place because it's just poor service. You know that you're not going to get any better. We as an industry, we deal with a lot of places. When I go and visit a parts supplier and you walk in there and they're just almost like, oh, it's you. It's disinterest, and it doesn't make you feel good about spending money at these places. And that's what it's all about, is building a relationship, you know, showing people that you care even a little bit. Even if you faked it, it would almost be better than nothing at all.
Sometimes you do have to fake it. I've had that conversation with my team. You know, I don't want to see you frowning when I walk in the door. I don't let you see me frown. That's my game. If I walk through the door and you ask me how I'm doing, the answer is always going to be fantastic or some derivation of that. It's our staff's job to give that impression to the client as well. They need to feel like they belong. So the limbic brain engages on that level. It doesn't necessarily have the ability to put what they feel into words. But like Jack said, when they know that they feel comfortable where they go, they're going to go more often. And the team is the same way. My staff has to know that I care about them. They have to know that when they come to me, they're going to get 100% of a positive reaction. Even if I feel like maybe they're invading my space at the time. It's my job to make the shop as busy as possible. And ironically, the busier they get downstairs, the more likely they are to be apathetic towards a relationship because they've got other things to do. So it's really important that I spend a lot of time with them, helping them understand the value of every word they use and every facial expression they use and every conversation they have. The way we engage with the staff reflects directly on how they engage with the employee or with the client, rather. For instance, we have an engagement survey that we do at least once a year. And sometimes two or three times a year. And some of the questions on that engagement survey is, for example, is there someone at work who encourages my development? Another question is, does my supervisor or someone at work seem to care about me as a person? And when we have them answer those questions, 1 through 5, it's either a 1 or a 5, our goal is to have them all as a 5, they really have to think about how their leadership is treating them. And if they have 1s and 2s on there, then it's not really a reflection of them. It's a reflection of how I'm treating them and how I'm making them feel. Thankfully, I very rarely get low scores. Actually, I'm looking at the one that my office manager gave me, who's also my wife. And I typically get the lowest scores from her, ironically, maybe not so ironically. But if there are ever 3s and 4s, I need to reflect upon how I'm treating them so that I can push those numbers to 4s and 5s. You know, we're not always going to get everybody right. We're not going to give them what they need every time. But it's important that they know that we're trying.
That's an I care.
That's I care enough to ask you if you feel like we care about you. And I want a real answer. Because if we don't get a real answer, then we can't move forward. Fortunately, we have a really good team on the counter with the people. In fact, one of our guys specifically is, his mission in life is to make every vehicle feel like it's cared for. In a literal sense, he gets offended when people don't maintain their cars. So the battle for him is to be, maybe sometimes he's over enthusiastic about the engagement with the vehicle, and he'll overlook the client for the care of the vehicle. So he can kind of, we have to rein him back sometimes and transfer that desire to make every car feel cared for to making every client feel cared for. And he's really good with people. So as soon as you get him on the right path, he's unstoppable. If you look through our reviews, he's brought up by name probably more than anybody. We've got 3,000 or so reviews. And he's probably in the last 2 or 3 years been in 20 or 30% of them by name. So when you get a guy who really engages well, or a lady who engages well with the public, that's really what you're looking for. And on the other hand, if you get someone whose mission in life is to fix cars, and that's really what they love, as long as you keep them cared for, as long as you take care of their needs, I think then the battle is halfway won, because it really starts with who's doing the job and how you, and when you let the right person in the room, then it's really easy to keep them on track. We give them a lot of ownership on their personal development. We have a performance management system, if you want to call it a review system, that we have in place, but I don't do the reviewing. They do the reviewing. They're merely required to make an appointment with me and review their progress on their goals. It's nothing that I give them. It's all intrinsic. So that's the way we really focus on keeping the right people and keeping them in charge of caring for themselves.
Hey, Carm here. Now, coming up, Jim describes his 12-step hiring process. Have you ever switched shop management systems and were left high and dry without data migrations? The software world can be a tough one, especially if your software provider isn't supporting you in the way you need them to. My expert recommendation, switch to Shopware today. With best-in-class onboarding, year-round support, and data migration experts at your fingertips, Shopware won't leave you wanting more. Listen, their team is one of the most dedicated in the business when it comes to servicing their clients. So they're going to do what it takes to get you up and running seamlessly. Shopware currently supports data migrations for more than 150 shop management systems, and they're constantly adding more. If you're thinking, ugh, I come from an unsupported SMS, well, rest assured, their team will do the legwork for you to evaluate capabilities and provide a data migration solution. So kick your feet up and visit GetShopware.com. You won't be disappointed. Do you lie awake at night wondering why your competitors have hundreds of five-star reviews, but you only have a few? What's one thing that top auto shops like Urban Auto Care have that sets them apart from the rest? Well, it's hundreds of five-star Google reviews. Literally, you could have this too. When do you ask for a review? Well, there's actually an optimal time to ask your client for an online review. According to Broadly, the best time to ask for a review is immediately after a service. They know. Think about it. That's when the experience is fresh, the vehicle looks good, and you've just satisfied their needs for safe and reliable transportation. Lots of companies say they can help your shop get more reviews, but what do they really offer? Broadly is the only platform that partners with Google for reviews and messaging in the auto space. Rest easy with Broadly, which gets you more online reviews and more people coming into your shop. On the web at getbroadly.com/chat to start chatting with a Broadly representative and learn more on the web at getbroadly.com/chat. Guys, this is great. I couldn't help but think this, the restaurant thing, Jack, that you were talking about, and I wrote the word toxic down. I think you may have even said that. Is this a benefit from the noise of COVID? Or it was going on before that, which continues to prove of the weak leadership that we have in running small business.
The restaurant thing has been going on for years, especially in my particular neighborhood. Our neighborhood is very picky. We know what we want. And if you decide not to give it to us, we decide not to give you our business. I think just in my neighborhood, we've closed down 5 or 6 restaurants just because of apathy. When you feel as though you're interrupting somebody, you don't want to go back there. No matter how much you like what was served to you, if it's served to you in a poor manner, you're not going to go back. You know, if I'm spending hard-earned money at a place, I want to feel that I'm getting something in return.
You really know when you get a server who's engaged, who likes the people, who enjoys the food, who likes the restaurant and the industry. You really know the difference between that person and a person who's kind of in the job just to get a paycheck. There's, I would say, an infinite number of ways you can count the benefits to being engaged in that position.
And strong leaders, guys, restaurant, plumbing store, it just doesn't matter. If they're close to their people and they do what both of you guys have actually chimed in all afternoon about, they solve their problem, but they genuinely have to care. And it was, who said, listener? Yeah, Nathan Adcock. Hey, thanks for being here again, man. You're being a good listener, and it goes to the individual performance, Jim. And I know you're big on this, Jack. I'm sure you are, too, running a multi-shop operation. Both of you guys are. If you're not listening to your people and then looking for ways for them to improve within your own business, within their own leadership style, they don't care. There's apathy in the business, and you've got yourself a bad cog in the wheel. Can you both share some stories of being able to sit down, being a good listener, doing the discovery that there are issues or there's gaps in performance, and what you've done about it?
So we do one-on-ones. I like discovering what they feel their roadblocks are. You know, what is preventing you from doing a good job every day? So my job, I see it as a roadblock remover. How can I, you know, take what you perceive as an issue and make it a non-issue anymore? Just by doing that, it shows that I care about them, helps them care about the customer. You know, it's all a big circle. If I just said, you know, figure it out on your own, then I don't care. They're not going to be successful because they're always hampered by something that is in their way. And it's just going to get in their own headspace. It's going to cause them to not care over time. So my job, as I see it, is to remove anything that they perceive as a distraction and help them do their job better.
Jack, without naming names or situations, can you give us an example so that our listener could relate?
We have a fairly extensive check-in process, and it was overly cumbersome in the beginning because we wanted to do it a certain way. We have a dog and pony show where a customer used to pull up, they used to just walk through our front door, a little bit of confusion. For us, what we did is we built a little service lane, and we have the customer wait out there for us. We do a specific walk around, we do things a certain way. And in the beginning, it was tough because we didn't know how we wanted to do it. And through their input, we were able to whittle it down to its bare minimum, but we still get what we want. We still get a good thorough walk around. The customer gets a good interaction at first. They're in their place of power at the vehicle. It all kind of works now. But in the beginning, it didn't. but listening to their input, you know, seeing how they wanted it to be, we're able to get what we wanted as a business and what they wanted to make their job easier and combine it into one thing.
I'm seeing more check-in lanes lately.
I haven't seen any around here, but it's a good thing. You know, for customers, they get to be in their place of power. When they walk through your front door, they're in your place of power. They're automatically scared. They don't know exactly what's going on. When they're in their vehicle sitting there, they don't have to worry about anything. They don't have to worry about coming in, being embarrassed, making a noise, doing anything that they perceive as a problem. It's just you and them outside in their vehicle. So it really works. It does help.
Jim, any examples to toss out to us about situations where you help that individual over a hurdle?
Every day. We have, I don't know if it's atypical of the industry or atypical of the world or if it's typical, but we have a really open communication style within the company that we've fostered. And when people become apathetic, which is bound to happen, we try to notice immediately. And very rarely does it have anything to do with the company or the business. It has to do with something else. So we talk, and if we see it happen on the spot, we bring it up and the questions are asked. And I think it's important for us as leadership to be engaged. I think if you had to, in the analogy that we're using, the discussion we're using today, I think a good antithesis to apathy is engagement. So if we remain engaged in the people that work around us and with us, I think that they understand that. So a good example of that, for instance, would be, we've got a brand new technician. He's been here for a year. He's 18 years old. He just finished junior college, actually. Got a degree from junior college. He's a really hard-driven kid. He's super smart. He's got some experience doing his own projects. And he'll probably be an ASC master certified technician by the time he's 19 or 20. He's also going to school for welding. He's driven, and he's also a good kid. He's also super nice and super helpful. And one of the guys came to me the other day and said, you know, you told me this is going to happen eventually, but I'm stuck in the middle of my ASC master certification. I've been doing the job for 10 years and now I'm scared this kid's going to pass me up. And it kind of bothers me. It kind of makes me not like him. I said, well, you know, that's not a reflection of him. That's kind of a reflection of your reaction to him. But as soon as that sort of conversation doesn't happen, then you might have, you started talking about toxicity a few minutes ago. That's where the apathy becomes toxic. And then you have a confrontational situation where one of my guys that have been here for six or 7 years, who we've been mentoring and getting to move through the ASC certifications, for instance, or becoming a better technician. And he's all in. He's just got other priorities at times. So he hasn't done the testing as long, as fast as we'd like. So he got a little bit discouraged, but he was comfortable coming to us and talking about that. So then I could pinpoint what might bother him in the next few days, months, or years, and get him to get beyond that hurdle. Basically, all we have to do is get him to perform up to his ability, and he won't worry about Chris, the new guy. He likes Chris, but now he's talking to me about his reaction towards Chris based on conversations we've had in the past about the tendency for him to get that way. So he was able to come to my office yesterday and say, okay, we've got a problem. It's a problem with me, and how do I fix it?
I love this story, Jim, because you're reaching out to a very young individual. I mean, listen, you've been around, by the way, for your service to our country. Thank you for your service. You've been around the horn, and you've got the wisdom, and you've made it easy for him to come to you. And he says, hey, listen, I got a problem with this guy, and you helped him through it, and you probably helped him grow on the maturity scale a whole lot. We should retitle this Preventing Apathy Inside Your Business and realize the power of leadership and the power of listening and the power of hiring right. Jim, I'd love you to talk about that in a minute. Jack, in the case of where you've been with the performance reviews, you're doing 360 like Jim is?
Yes, we do it annually. We don't do it as often as he does. One of the things that Greg does, one of the owners, he asks everybody three questions. On a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing? On a scale of 1 to 10, how are we doing? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you and GNC doing? He asks them frequently, so they have to think of a number. And you can almost always tell if there's a lack of engagement, if they're having an issue, whether or not they're thinking of a lower number than what they're actually giving you. So those are three great questions to ask, and he does it all the time.
Is this like every couple of months?
More frequent than that.
I really like that answer because that answer is situational. You could have a great couple of months, give a survey out, and things are rosy, and then you have a really bad week, and the survey doesn't come out for a couple of months later. And so I love the idea of, if you will, litmus testing, it, like a COVID test. Maybe you got to go to yourself every week to be sure you're okay. So, guys, what do we do in the gym? What do we do in the hiring process to make sure you're finding a great team fit so that you could monitor, you know, the fact that we don't go into an apathetic situation soon in the business with a new person?
Let me touch on one thing you said just a moment ago about the performance review process, if I may, for 30 seconds. We don't have a performance review process. I don't ever review their performance in a specific time frame. We do immediate spot checks, high priority interrupts, if you will. If I see something I don't like, I tell them now. Immediately. If they see something that they don't like about me, they tell me now. And the relationship has to be fostered to where that happens. We don't do a 360 per se. If I tick somebody off or say something wrong, they need to tell me right now. And they typically do in our company. I foster that. We try to make that happen. And if they do something wrong, they hear about it immediately and then never again, as long as it's fixed. So our performance review, as you stated, is actually a performance management system. They're in charge of managing their own performance. So they tell me what they're going to do. And then I coach them through it.
A great takeaway, high priority interrupts. There's a soundbite right there. I love that.
I stole that from Marcus Buckingham. It's not my...
Great author, great management guy. So the hiring process, guys, let's see what we get. Let's talk about this in our final segment here.
Our hiring process is pretty specific from the get-go with what we expect. And it's about a 12-step process. It's no simple deal. It takes about anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks to get through. There's a lot of meetings. There's some writing assignments. There's discussions. There's conversations that happen throughout that process. And we're really looking at passing up about 95 to 99% of our applicants. And the reason is because if we let them in the door too early, we're going to get rid of them anyway, or they're going to get rid of us. It's got to be a bilateral decision. So we start by really doing a drive-by interview and find out whether or not there's any reason to meet again. We follow that up with a writing assignment based on basically what their mission statement is going to be for their career in the industry and with Pacific Motor Service. And we give them a budget worksheet, just a simple Excel budget worksheet with the number that we're going to be able to pay them so that they can match that to their bills to make sure that it's a fit early on. The worst thing we can do is offer someone a position, get them in the position, and they figure out they can't live on what we can pay. So we try to knock a few of those obstacles down early on. And when we figure out that we want to continue with the conversation and they want to come back to meet with us, sometimes people say, you know what, you guys are kind of weird. We don't want to deal with you guys. I just want to come and work. I don't want to be part of a big, bright, happy family. I want to be apathetic. We make it pretty clearly early on that that can't happen. They can't work here if they're going to be that sort of person. So once we get through the first couple of segments of that interview process, it becomes more conversational, more of a discussion-based issue where they ask just as many questions as we ask, because we really want them to know what we're working for and working towards. We want them to know what our values are and how our standards are. Then they can make the decision whether or not they want to be a part of that. So many of our applicants actually self-select out. The ones that last to the end, we actually meet with them and their significant other. Or in the young guy Chris's case, we had a meeting with his parents and kind of spelled out what his career would look like for the next 20 years if he comes to work with us, because he was only 17 when he came on. So that's the level of engagement. That's kind of a skeleton. That's kind of a framework of what we do. And it helps the potential teammate really understand that we're in it for a long term and for the right reasons.
I'm fascinated by the 99% don't make it statement. Are you always recruiting then, just in case, because it's such a long process?
Not always recruiting. We're recruiting about 75% of the time. We just filled out our staff. We had an open position for about 3 years because we were looking for the right person. There aren't that many, and Jack can probably attest to this as well, there aren't that many quality applicants that even get a call back once they turn in their application or their resume. I can be kind of a perfectionist when I read resumes, and if I'm seeing misspellings and long lists of prior job experience that they've done for six jobs for a year at a time, I'm not going to call them back. So a lot of those get waived right away, and it's hard. It takes a lot of discipline to not hire when you have a need, but if you let the wrong guy in the door or lady in the door, then you're really in trouble. So when I say 99%, it's not always from my direction. Sometimes they disqualify us. because we're not what they want. You know, maybe they don't want to do what we do. But I think it's important to make that clear up front so that they can make that decision.
Jack, what about your process or screening to help prevent apathy?
One of the things that I did on my last go round looking for advisors is I put on there, you must be passionate about customer service. I don't care what field you come from. You know, I can train anybody to be an advisor, but you have to be passionate about customers. If you don't care about them, if you don't want to help them, if you think that you're coming in just to make a paycheck, I don't want anything to do with you. So the latest go around asking everybody, you know, give me a example of how you wowed a customer. You know, give me an example of, you know, a customer that you turned from upset into happy. And some people can't give you an answer. They don't know. They've never done it before. And those are the people that you kind of want to shy away from and say, all right, I think I'm good. I don't really need you. So I don't think we're as high as 99%, but I think it's up there as far as applicants that we'll take a pass on. But we do a phone interview. We do a Zoom interview. Zoom interviews will typically last about 30 minutes. Lots of questions back and forth. And during that process, I also try and upset them a little bit. Say something that may offend them to see how they respond to it.
We do a lot of personality discussions. You've heard of the DISC assessment?
Oh, yeah. I've taken them, and we've done shows on DISC. Yes.
So one of the things I have here, you can maybe see it's kind of an unprofessional version, but we actually draw things out a lot. There's a lot of visual representations here. So you can see the little initials by everybody's little deal. We actually have open conversations about how people are going to react to each other, about which sort of personalities fit different situations better. So when Jack's talking about, for instance, having a person that's going to be engaged, highly engaged on the front counter, you can't get someone who wants to be in the corner just working on an assignment on a spreadsheet or back in the back room removing heads to work on the guy, on the client. You have to have someone who's going to be highly engaged with the client all the time. So we do, that's part of the hiring process. We have them do a DISC assessment. That doesn't disqualify them per se, but that kind of informs how we're going to approach the training that they need. If they're going to be a service advisor and they're going to be in the conscientious, and they're going to be, or they're going to be more driven, or they're going to be more introverted, we have to really make sure that we spell out the needs of the position so that they can say, well, I'm an introvert, but I can really engage on this level for 7 or 8 hours a day. If that's the case, we can let them in the door. If they say, well, yeah, I'd really rather be in the back room not talking to anybody, to Jack's point, we can't have them on board. It's just not going to fit. So I think if you get the right person through the door with the understanding of what it's going to require to do the job, it really makes it easier to be engaged.
Let me try to summarize a great New Year's resolution. Don't let apathy fester or even come in your door. Find a way to have high priority interrupts and listen and learn. Survey your people often. It's more them than you. Stay close to your people and fix the issues that exist, not with you, not with them, not with he or she, but with everything in the business. And you know, literally, that's our job. We're in the service experience business. We have to create great places to work and live our values. And if you don't have a value set, then you need to create one and find it and live toward that. And be very careful on your interviewing process, right, Jim?
Rigorous, but not ruthless.
Great, great to have you all here. Jack, current COO of GNC Tire and Auto Service, two locations out of Virginia. And Jim Hayes, General Manager, Pacific Motor Service, two locations, Monterey, Pacific Grove. I can't wait to come to Monterey again and stop in and hang with you guys someday,
hey,
Jack.
Hey, come on in,
Jim.
You can buy us lunch.
I will. Are you kidding me? I owe you lunch for coming in last minute. So thanks so much, guys. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
You bet. Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.